everybody. Welcome to The Kelly O Show. I'm your host, Kelly Alexa. This show is dedicated to inspiring women of all ages to pursue excellence in mind, body, and business. After decades of playing small in my own life and staying in the comfort zone, a couple of years of massive chaos and drama in my personal and my professional life forever changed me for the better. Through some tough lessons, I evolved, and I became a stronger and more confident version of myself, fearless, and finally, unapologetically myself. I am now designing my life bigger and better than ever before, and most importantly, I'm designing a life on my terms that is full of joy and happiness. And I think that this is something that's been missing for so many women. They're either staying in the comfort zone like I was, or they've got a life that looks pretty good on the outside, but it's missing real joy and health and happiness. And that is no bueno. I believe that the future is female, and every week this show is going to bring you incredible interviews and live shows that I hope is going to motivate you to take massive action in your life, to leave the comfort zone and go all in, again, to pursue achieving excellence in mind, body, and in business. I hope you enjoy the show, and let's dive in. Hey, everybody, welcome back to part two of this two-part interview with Dr. Lane Sebring on cholesterol. If you haven't listened to part one, you definitely, particularly on this episode, need to listen to part one before you will be able to understand what we're talking about in part two.
In the George Bush administration, if I'm correct, the second one, like they went to the World Health Organization and they didn't want some of that information that was basically saying, you know, here's what you should be eating. And it's not eating all of these cereals and grains and breads and fake foods. You know, it was essentially overturning that. And they actually asked that not be, like, I'm summarizing here, but they asked, don't tell people in America about that. And it was pushed by this, you know, these food companies and the dairy companies. And it's frightening when you realize the information that is being chosen to give to you. So, you know, that kind of goes back to A, here's what doctors know. B, so what's the answer? Would you say that it's that we all have to go do our own research in a big way? Because I think we all have to understand, like, we're really having a lot of information hidden from us.
I don't think we have enough time. The average person certainly doesn't have enough time to read everything and then tease out what's the truth. I mean, you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, we sort of have to do that watching the news these days. You have to watch this and this and this. You got somewhere in the middle. But what happens with when you start to do that, you're just going to be overwhelmed. So here's the real... If people, I may sound like a broken record here, but if people understand the paleo diet, the diet that humans are designed to eat, and the history behind that, give me about a minute and a half here, and I think I can get through this pretty
quick. You've got it.
Okay, so the paleo diet is a diet that humans are designed to eat. It's not one that was contrived or made up, and scientists didn't sit down and figure it out. It's what human beings have been eating for over 2 million years. Somebody says it's the longest experiment in history, you know. So people have data that they think that this is a good their diet is a better diet or whatever. But we've got 2 million years of heavy duty hardcore selection with the paleo diet. So 10,000 years ago, when the climate changed and started getting very dry in the Middle East. The forest area started turning into a desert. And so the animals died out, the plants died out, and humans didn't. And so they had to figure out a way to survive in that sort of environment. So they learned to grow grains by the riverbanks. And they chose grains because they never ate them before. They considered grains as starvation food at best. They chose grains because they could store them because they only had a short growing season. So, okay. That makes perfect sense. But the next question should be, why can you store them? I thought it was food. And so the answer is that grains put toxins in their seeds on purpose. That's their seed. They don't want it to be good food for the animals. So they put toxins in it that keep the animals and insects from going after their seeds. They have to put enough nutrition in that seed to grow a new plant, but that's nutrition for a plant, not an animal. So what they learned, those they could get rid of a lot of those toxins, most of them, in fact, if you heated them up, if you cooked them. But it didn't get rid of all of them, and it's still not designed to be food. So what happened when we added grains to the diet, and I'm talking all grains, from rice to corn to wheat to barley, oats, all of them, and even if they're steel cut, I get that kind of question for people. If they're steel cut, are they okay? No. Grains don't want their seed eaten. That's not food. If you eat enough grains raw, they will kill you. Okay?
Really? So,
yeah, that's right. And the same with beans and the same with potatoes. Those are three foods that were added to the diet around, you know, several thousand years ago and is not part of the human diet before then. We have no genetic experience with it. No other animals eat those things. There's a few rodents that can eat seeds, okay? But it's usually actually not part of their major source of food. So when we added grains to the diet, what happened? Well, we lost 7 inches in height. That's malnutrition.
Wow.
That we got osteoporosis, never before seen in human history. Our jaws were no longer strong enough and large enough to hold all of our teeth, so you get a crowding of teeth. That's why we have crooked teeth, and hunter-gatherers have perfect, beautiful teeth all the time. Our brain size shrank. Seriously? Yes, brain size shrank because the skull of hunter-gatherers are wider than ours. And our eyes are closer together. And our brain casing is smaller, so we have a smaller brain. So you've got all these changes, including a nose that's too small to breathe out of now because the face was scrunched together. And you can see there's a lot of people with much more narrowed faces, more common than what it was, you know, 60 years ago. I'll tell you that. And so these changes are continuing to evolve in a not healthy way. So that's what happened. Osteoporosis, more frequent infections, more devastating infections showed up with the introduction of grains into the diet. And the, let's see, what else was there? Yeah, the autoimmune disease. So that, I guess that pretty well covers the big hit that we took. More pain in childbirth. As like hunter-gatherer women seem to have almost no trouble having babies. So anybody that's lived with hunter-gatherers for any length of time will tell you they're more intelligent. They are better at problem solving. They're more interested in people and their environment. And interestingly, they are less affected by adversity in childhood into adulthood. And one other thing, if we're talking about cholesterol and health, et cetera, the functionality of a hunter-gatherer from newborn just rises up as it ages and becomes, has more abilities and to think and to move and all of that. And by the time they're 30 to 35 years old, then that rise kind of stops, but it remains flat and keeps on going way, way out, even into their 90s. Because a 90-year-old hunter-gatherer will keep up with a 20 and 30-year-old hunter-gatherer on the hunt. And that sort of thing is what people don't really appreciate. So if you want a template for health, there it is. You have to have that knowledge. And so when you know that, and somebody starts telling you grains are good for you, or potatoes are good for you, and you know that hunter-gatherers never, ever had heart disease, now there's virtually, I've never heard of a case of cancer amongst a hunter-gatherer, and I've read about this a lot. And so when they tell you that red meat will cause heart disease, then you tell them, no, red meat doesn't, but feedlot meat can.
What is feedlot meat?
Well, feedlot meat is where you put the animal that is to be eaten in a stocks around its neck, and so all it can do is sit there and eat, and they give them grains, which is not a food for cows. Cows eat grass. If a cow is eating grass, she's going to live from 20 to 25 years, pretty much disease-free, having her babies, no trouble. But if you give her grains for her food, she's going to live 1, maybe 2 years. And even then, and she won't live that long unless you have her on antibiotics to beat down the liver abscesses caused by the leakage of bacteria stuff through the intestinal wall. And it's just a mess. And so they blame these animals. They blame red meat. If you eat any animal you want, who's eating its natural diet, you're going to be just fine. And the more of that you eat, the healthier you're going to be. The average hunter-gatherer gets 70% or more of their calories from animal.
You know, so, and this is part of, I think it's reflective of the big picture, which is, you know, some of these are discussions I try to have with my parents, and that's a whole generation that has been misled nutritionally. And when I see people at the grocery store and when I see what they're buying, and then when I have conversations with people I care about and they say, oh, I'm on these five drugs to fix my blood sugar, my cholesterol, my this, my that. And then, you know, I was stressed out, so my doctor put me on Xanax, and then I'm on this and I'm on that. And it's like the common sense is gone from the advice that we're giving. And we don't even take a step back and think about, okay, what is, like, people, they don't think about everything you just illustrated so effectively, which when you hear it that way, that a cow, if you're eating meat, a cow would normally live, if it's in its natural environment and it's eating grass and it's, you know, pasture grass fed, it's going to live 25 years. But then if it's not, and it's in a cage and it's being treated poorly, it's going to be needing all of these antibiotics, and that's what's going to come through the meat. So not only is that animal going to have a poorer experience of life, right, we are going to be eating that and consuming that. And people don't think that. They just think, oh, it's so bad for me. Steak is bad for me. And then, you know, they're at the grocery store and they're buying Fiber One cereal and having skim milk and, you know, eating. I mean, I still have this discussion, and maybe this would be a good point for a lot of people listening who still, this is kind of a departure. And I'm going to say this too. Okay. So for your average person who's listening, it can be a big step to look at the paleo diet if you're eating this way that we're talking about. But, you know, this is my suggestion, not necessarily Dr. Sebring's, but, you know, you can get there. You don't have to, like, go cold turkey. Dr. Sebring might tell you to go cold turkey. But there's steps you can take. And the first step is knowledge is power, is understanding this. So, Dr. Sebring, when there are people out there, because there's a lot in our audience, and there's a lot of people who are starting to listen to this show, who are following misguided information. They're still focusing on a really low fat diet. They're eating a bunch of, you know, a lot of grains, a lot of cereal, a lot of Fiber One cereal, I don't mean to vilify a brand necessarily, but, you know, low fat cereal and skim milk, not organic skim milk, but crappy skim milk. And then they're having, you know, lots of caffeine and coffee to get them through the day, lots of sugar. And they're on all of these drugs. They're on metformin for insulin resistance. They're on cholesterol. They're on statins for, you know, cholesterol. What's the outcome for people that are not giving themselves any nutrition? They're avoiding healthy fats. They're on all these drugs. What's happening to their body when they're on six different drugs for six different problems? And then they're eating, you know, again, avoiding eggs, avoiding healthy fats, you know, not scared to have dressing on a salad, you know, anything like that. What's the future?
Well, you know, not long, several years ago, I had an orthopedic surgeon who would come in for half a day into my clinic. And, you know, he was watching my patients, and he knew that the ones that I sent him seemed to heal faster, you know, from surgery if they needed it. And that they came in and were just further down the road to recovery than he would expect. And so he kind of took an interest in what I was doing. And one day he confided in me. He says, you know, I try not to get involved with my family's health, but my wife's mother was put in a nursing home and then later on hospice. She was just going downhill very quickly. And I suggested, well, why don't you, they didn't know what to do about all that. And she said, why don't you just stop all of her drugs? You know, she's hardly alert at all. Mainly just sleeps all the time. So we could just stop all of her medications. And so they did. And a week later, she went home independent. She woke up. And that's what happens. These drugs suck the life out of you. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you've got high blood pressure, that needs to be handled. If you have high blood sugar and you need something to increase your insulin, then that's fine. But I will tell you that if you start doing the paleo diet or just living in harmony with your genetics instead of in contempt of your genetics, you will find that those diseases start falling off. And that's what I do every day in my clinic. And I'm not the only doctor doing it. I've probably just been doing it longer than most. So that's what happens. And I will tell you that the number one, this is an example. The drugs that we take for a particular disease, as often as not, it will actually promote the progression of that disease. So let me just give you an example.
Wow.
So statins have been shown to cause heart failure. Because for one, they block the use or the body's ability to make coenzyme Q10. And CoQ10 is required for life. And the little mitochondria that make energy requires CoQ10 to work. And guess what? There's a whole lot of those little mitochondria in our heart cells. In fact, 78% of the volume of a heart cell, of a heart muscle cell, that muscle, which is contracting, et cetera, but the volume of that, 78% of the volume of that cell is filled with mitochondria. So mitochondria are really important to the heart. Yet the mitochondria can't make energy without CoQ10. And 10 milligrams of an average statin drug will reduce the body's CoQ10 levels by 47% by the end of the first year.
Wow.
And they have shown through good studies, and it only makes sense now that you understand it, that if you stop the statin drug or give the person CoQ10, you can reverse the heart failure. So there's one supposed to be for your heart, right? Causes heart failure. That's a fact. There's also, and doctors could give you CoQ10, but they don't even think you need it. In Japan, it's against the law to give someone a statin drug or to make a statin drug without CoQ10 in that same pill.
Really?
In Europe, if a doctor gives a patient a statin drug, he has to also give them a prescription for CoQ10. Now, here in the United States, CoQ10 is not prescription. It's over the counter. You can just go buy it yourself. But the doctors, I can name maybe three cardiologists in the last 20 years that recommend CoQ10 for my patients. So they're not doing it. Here's another one. So here's a person who has a diabetes. The first drug they put them on, its biggest effect is to stop the liver from putting sugar into the bloodstream. Well, you kind of think, well, that's a good idea, right? But the liver is supposed to be controlling your blood sugar. It's like a thermostat on the wall. As you use up sugar, it slowly releases sugar into the bloodstream. So you keep your blood sugar at a nice, healthy working level. It's like a thermostat going off and on through the day, and you're running your air conditioner. Click on, click off, click on, click off. And by doing that, right? It just keeps it going exactly a nice sugar level. Well, if you stop that process, you can't stop one of the body's major processes or functioning mechanisms and expect that to work. It is not. It never will. So what happens is these people, when their blood sugar starts to fall, guess what happens? It falls. It just starts going downhill. And these people get, you know, they can get hangry. they can get lightheaded. But if there's carbs around, your brain's going, I need carbs and I need them now. And so guess what? These people live off carbs. It's the only way you can keep your blood sugar back up. This is a diabetic that you have forced them to eat carbs. So the liver could take protein and turn it into sugar. That's a great way for it to keep your sugar levels up. But it's kind of like you get to think about protein as time-release glucose. But you have to allow the liver to do its job naturally and release that sugar, click, 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 perfectly, just as you need it.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to, because a lot of what you you just stated there, I think is this common sense piece that can be missing. And I feel like a lot of these drugs that are created, they figure out some combination of ingredients that is going to work for one symptom, right? But
right.
What they're not doing typically, and I'm summarizing this out of my knowledge, is they're not testing to see, well, what happens to this person when we do this? You know, like they're not seeing, oh, well, how does this affect somebody who has diabetes? They're just like, we are going to go in and make that cholesterol go down. But there's never, nothing works in our body in isolation. It's just like working out. When you're working out, you can't spot reduce. You can't go, I only want to get this fat off my thighs. Our body's going to lose fat wherever it wants to, and it's going to gain it wherever it wants to. And all of these processes are interconnected. So you can't have you can't say, I'm just going to lower my cholesterol and everything's going to be fine. I have learned more than anything with dealing with all of my hormones that, you know, everything affects everything else. And the very drugs that you take to solve a problem, I keep thinking back to the spironolactone that my doctors put me on to supposedly address these skin bumps I got. And I was on that at the highest dose for 9 years. And I was terrified when I was meeting with Dr. Sebring and we said, we're going to, you know, wean us off it because it's an anti-androgen. Is that right? Anti-androgen?
Yeah, it blocks testosterone.
Which is
what you just said, an anti-androgen. Uh-huh.
And so here's the nutshell, people. I don't know how long it's been. I've been off of it for 2 years, I think. Have I completely been overrun by bumps? Nope. Did I get bumps while I was on spironolactone? Absolutely. That's why they kept increasing the dose. So here I was taking these pills to get rid of the bumps. And instead I made all that those pills, because they block testosterone, caused more problems with all of my hormones. Because when your testosterone goes low, that affects all of your other hormones. So these drugs don't just work on one thing. They are going to affect everything else. And I think that, you know, we're coming up on an hour, Dr. Sebring, which I knew we would be, because we kind of covered the whole skim milk thing in this whole episode and this concept that I wanted to drive home. But I have a question for you that I know is going to happen for people that are listening to this.
Okay.
This two-part episode. So, and this is where I get stuck, because I will run into somebody, you know, like this woman I referenced, like my parents, and they'll say, well, okay, so the way I'm eating is bad. I'm on all these drugs. What do I do? Because, you know, if they go to their doctor and say, I want to get off these drugs, they're going to go, and you can't just go off drugs cold turkey. Am I right? So imagine if somebody's listening, and let's use my friend as an example, who's on a statin drug for cholesterol. They're on an insulin reducing, or they have insulin resistance. So they're on something to lower insulin. They're on an antidepressant. They're on a thyroid, Synthroid. And I'm trying to think of something like Xanax. Where do they start?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, what they don't start doing is start dropping off all that stuff themselves.
I'm glad you said that, because obviously I'm not a doctor, but I said you can't just stop. I know that you need guidance.
Right. And my goal is to get people off their drugs, but I'm not stupid, and I know sometimes those, you know, they don't have a perfect body I'm starting with. Sometimes the body does need some help, and so the goal is to stop those, but you can do that over time. But the first thing you do is change your diet. And once you start changing your diet and the exercise and I usually prescribe more resistance exercise. If you can do that, it's better. Lifting weights is far superior to running. Running's okay, but you want to keep that down to, kind of your secondary form of exercise. But when you do those things, and then you'll find out that you things improved already without beyond what the drugs were doing. And then you start backing off of those drugs. Now, I tell my patients, you can stop the cholesterol drug cold turkey, but that's because I'm supervising them. I've looked them over. I know what the risks are, etc. And just to tell you that occasionally, rarely, I will put someone on a statin drug, but that's a very rare exception. And so, but, you know, you got to work with your doctor. And if your doctor won't work with you, find a new doctor. There's a lot more out there besides me that is doing this. And so that would be the way I would approach it.
And when people are, because this is, I would say, the number one question people are asking me. I have, you know, I've shared my hormonal imbalance journey, and which is still a journey, on YouTube. And I've told you this, Dr. Sebring, I get more people leaving comments on my first video, and I shot an updated video to answer them, to kind of go, here's where I am 3-4 years later. But they're asking all the time, how do I find a doctor? I get people writing in from the UK and Japan, and, you know, would you say it's best to just look up, you know, an integrative doctor, alternative health doctor? I feel like I don't want to recommend going to an endocrinologist, because everyone I've ever talked to that's gone to an endocrinologist has gotten some of the worst advice I've ever heard. I know I'm making a sweeping generalization there, but what do you think they look for when they're trying to find a good doctor?
I tend to agree with you there. It's the endocrinologists are very, very cookbook. And there's a reason for that, is because they're very dependent on primary care docs who are not like me, who are also cookbook. And if the endocrinologist does something out of line, according to those guys, they're not referring anybody to them anymore. Mm. So they have to be the way they are. You could go to the worldhealth.net. Worldhealth.net is the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. These are board certified doctors in anti-aging medicine, which is pretty advanced knowledge in what I do. You can look for functional medicine doctor, or you can look for integrative medicine doctor, which is kind of the way I describe myself, and meaning I integrate modern medicine like everybody else practices it, but I also do a lot of nutrition. I do anti-aging medicine, so I integrate all of those together. I use orthomolecular medicine. That's where you use the body's own chemistry. So much more powerful for getting a person healthy and treating disease than the drugs are. I'll just throw in that proper use of prescription drugs is the fourth leading cause of death in America.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Not surprising, but, you know, people, I think the first time that I really started to pay attention to, you know, all of these drugs is when I had my first migraine, and it was as a result of going on that low estrogen Fae birth control. And I remember I was just, I could not believe they put me on that pill to deal with accelerated bleeding. They said that would, you know, yeah, you've got all these cysts on your ovaries, but we're just going to put you on these, you know, this birth control pill. And I gained 25 pounds over the period of 6 weeks. Wow. And without changing my diet or anything.
And then they gave you an antidepressant, right?
they suggested it, but I didn't. Yeah. But they put me on Molo. And when I did some Googling, the amount, and you guys do it yourself, because a lot of you I know are on the same Lolo Estrin Fae. I mean, the side effects that are known from Lolo Estrin Fae, there are hundreds of thousands of women out there in forums online. And I know it's not just that one. There's many other birth control pills. I mean, the birth control, that's a whole other topic we're going to address. But, you know, the side effects were like, you know, people have gotten divorced because they've gotten so violently depressed from this birth control pill. And weight gain and headaches and migraines. And, you know, I mean, it's on and on and on. Nobody looks at the pamphlet when they're given a drug. They just take the drug and the doctor says, this is going to help you do this. So they go, okay, that's how we all were. And it's time for us to question and go, what are the side effects? What does this do to my body? Explain this. So, you know, as Dr. Sebring said, you know, not all of us, that's a big, huge reason why I'm doing this podcast, so that I can make it easier. You can listen in the car on the way to work to some of this stuff and start learning. Then look, you know, do your own due diligence and do additional research, because none of us have time to get our PhD in researching nutrition and medicine. But we will make sure, I'll make sure in the show notes on thekellyoshow.com that I link up to everything Dr. Sebring referenced. Dr. Sebring, we do have to close up because we're at about an hour, and this will be a great two-part episode. I'm so glad we did this. But tell people where they can find you online, because there's going to be some people who are in the Texas area his practice is out in, you know, I'm geographically challenged, part of Austin and Wimberley. But tell people where they can find out information about your clinic if they want to come see you as a patient. And then, you know, where can they find you online to maybe, you know, write in or start reading and learning more from you?
My original website is SebringClinic.com. Sebring like the car, S-E-B-R-I-N-G, SebringClinic.com. And then a new one that you and I are working on is, it's not quite filled out yet, but there's a lot of good information on it also, called whatwecouldbe.com. Mm.
And just for everybody listening, we have, there is going to be, Dr. Sebring has a fantastic ebook and a package that can go with this ebook that's essentially like, I'm just going to call it like your optimized health in a package, right? Like what, everything that he starts his patients on, these are the nutritional food guidelines, lifestyle habits, and, you know, his three key, his trifecta of additional supplements from a nutritional perspective that he recommends. And we're going to get that live. We're going to have a tremendous amount of podcast and blog content and video content coming up. So I do encourage you to head on over to whatwecouldbe.com, as well as, you know, if you're interested in seeing him as a patient, I can't recommend him strongly enough. He's changed my life forever. If you don't live in Texas, to be honest, it would be worth you flying down to Austin to go see him. And I know he's probably on a waiting list. So if you want to, head on over to SebringClinic.com and put that inquiry in as soon as possible. And certainly be sure to mention, you know, you heard about him on the podcast, because that can help us plan better for the future. So thank you, Dr. Sebring, for this. This was another fantastic episode. I can't wait for people to be able to access more of your tremendous brain power, and when we get your book live and other things that we're going to be doing, it's fantastic. So everybody make sure you tune in for that. If you have any questions on this episode, of course, we encourage you to connect with Dr. Sebring online directly. If you have topics, Dr. Sebring is going to be our own version of, he might get mad at me for saying this, Dr. Phil. He's going to be the Dr. Phil to the Oprah, right? But that's just a figurative speaking. He's going to be on the show a lot. So if you have questions or topics that you would like to see us cover, please email my assistant, Angie@KellyAlexa.com. You can also use that same email address if you would like to inquire about advertising on this show or submitting a nomination for somebody that you would like to have us interview on the show coming up. Would love to hear about that. But thanks everybody for tuning in. We will see you next time on The Kelly O Show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. That's the end of this two-part episode with Dr. Lane Sebring on cholesterol. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, of course, we encourage you, if these are questions for Dr. Sebring, connect with him directly. You can find him on Facebook. You can also just head to his new website, whatwecouldbe.com. There's a contact me form, and you can send in an email that way. If you have questions for me on this episode or future episodes, you can email me, Angie@KellyAlexa.com. That's my assistant. You can also fill out the contact me form on my website, KellyAlexa.com. You'll find the show notes for this episode and other episodes at thekellyoshow.com. And we'd like to ask you a favor. You know it's coming. It would really help this show get seen and heard by more people if y'all would head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. I am putting a lot of time and investment into this show and have big things planned. We're going to hit the road in 2020 and really bring you a lot of fantastic information, fantastic people. I've got a lot of surprises up my sleeve, I promise you. So we would certainly love it if you would spread the love, share the show, and certainly give us a review on iTunes. It'll take just a few minutes and it helps the show, again, get seen and heard by more people. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for all of your emails and notes and Instagram messages about how much you're liking the new show and the new format. I really appreciate it. We're just getting started. We'll see you next time on The Kelly O Show.